All right, thank you everyone. Can you guys hear me? Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and get started with my outline. I'm going to give you some background on root lesion nematodes or Pratelenchus species and some of the damage that they cause. Some of our goals of the Pratelenchus project, as we call it, and some problems that we've identified as we've undertaken this project. And then a hypothesis that we developed to solve some of these problems and the materials, methods, and results that have come from that research. So Pratelenchus nematodes are found worldwide in many of the major wheat-growing areas of the world. Yield loss has been reported as high as 85% in some areas. In the Pacific Northwest, where we are conducting our research, we say we average about 50% yield loss, and we have also seen reduced grain quality. And you can see a picture here. Alpala is a spring wheat that is commonly grown in the Pacific Northwest. And here, where's my mouse? There it is. In this plot, we have very little nematodes in the plot. And then over here, we have nematodes at what you would expect to find at a normal level in many growers' fields of our area. And you can see that the damage that's caused. The plants are unthrifty, we have smaller heads, resulting in that grain yield loss. And people, when they see this, will often think, well, this resembles drought symptoms. But below ground, what's happening is the Pratelenchus are using this stylet here to penetrate the root cells to feed. And the nematodes will fully incorporate themselves into the root cortex, which you see here. I have the nematodes stained in pink. And this leads to root browning, as you'll see the mouse see here and here, and reduced lateral roots, which ultimately causes the plant's inability to take up water and nutrients, which causes those drought-like symptoms above ground. The good news is that we have identified resistance to Pratelenchus species in wheat landrace successions. And when I say resistant, I mean that the nematode populations are suppressed or reduced, which causes less root damage. And you see that here in the center one, this AUS2451. And then conversely, susceptible means that we have an increasing nematode population and you have increased root damage, which leads to these brown roots here. And these were grown in containers in the greenhouse. We have also identified molecular markers that are associated with that resistance to help aid in breeding. So the goal of the Pratelenchus project is to incorporate the identified resistance into adapted Pacific Northwest cultivars. And we have done this. So Louise, I showed you earlier what it looks like in the container. This is what it looks like grown in one of our field locations. It looks like the plot that I showed you earlier. The plants are unthrifty, they aren't healthy, and you have very small heads. But then here, right next to this plot, is Louise that has had the AUS2451 resistance crossed into it. The plants look much better. We have more biomass. The heads are bigger, and you get better yield. This particular location was identified by our collaborator, Dr. Richard Smiley, and all of our locations were identified by Dr. Richard Smiley from Oregon State University. So all of our locations are actually in Oregon, not Washington. So the biggest problem that we identified with this project is that phenotyping is time-consuming and expensive. And a lot of breeders just really don't want to take that on. Or can't take it on due to budget issues. And it doesn't matter if we're doing this in the greenhouse or in the field, you have to extract the nematodes and count them to determine if they're resistant or susceptible. And this takes a great deal of time and money. So we asked ourselves, what could we do to make working with Pratelenchus resistance easier for breeders to take on and make them actually want to work with it? And we said, well, indirect field phenotyping method would be great, because that's ultimately where we need the resistance to perform, and then breeders could select for other traits at the same time if they wanted to. So we said, all right, how do we tackle this problem? We said, well, people often say that the symptoms resemble drought. Can we use drought physiology models to develop this indirect field-based phenotyping method? And the drought physiology models, we actually know quite a bit about them because drought is a major issue, as I'm sure many of you are aware. And just real briefly, what the drought physiology models tell us is that a plant that perceives low soil moisture is going to accumulate the plant hormone abscisic acid, or ABA. And this ultimately causes the stomates in the leaves to close to prevent water loss through transpiration. The only problem is this also prevents carbon dioxide from coming in for fixation for photosynthesis. So on a whole plant level, what you expect to see in drought is increased canopy temperature and decreased photosynthesis. So then how we might apply this to Pratelenchus resistance is that in a susceptible wheat line or variety, because the nematode populations are increasing, we have more root damage. And therefore, the plant might perceive low soil moisture because of this. And you'll get that accumulation of ABA leading to the closed stomates. But then conversely, in a resistant plant, because the nematode populations are being suppressed or reduced, we have less root damage. And therefore, the plant is not perceiving that low soil moisture, and we don't get the closing of the stomates as readily as we do in the susceptible lines. So on a whole plant level, we would expect to see reduced canopy temperature and increased photosynthesis as is normal for that particular variety. So to test this idea, we had three different locations identified by Dr. Smiley with having mid to high nematode populations all in Oregon. The first year we had three locations, we bumped it down to two because that third location was just very hard for us to get to at the times that we needed to get to it. And we had four varieties or four wheat lines that we tested consistently over the years. And they are Alpaua and Louise, that are susceptibles that I showed you earlier. The AUS line, which I also showed you earlier. And then Persia 20 is another resistant landrace succession. And then Luau down here is a recombinant inbred line population that we used for validation purposes. And it's a cross between the susceptible Louise and resistant AUS. So then some of the measurements that we took, we did the Phi PS2 as a measurement of photosynthesis with a Waltz mini PAM, canopy temperature with just an infrared temperature gun. And we did this at two different growth stages, ZADOX 31 to 41, and that's in the elongation, stem elongation phase. And then ZADOX 53 to 69, that's in the heading to enthesis phase of the plant. And then we also asked ourselves, well, what are some measurements that a breeder is going to take from a field trial anyway, and can we incorporate that? And we said, well, grain moisture, protein, and starch content is something that a breeder will look at, the yield, of course, and then the grain volume weight. And then our collaborator, Dr. Smiley, did the time-consuming and expensive part of actually measuring the number of Pratelenchus per plot per genotype for each year for us. So we had quite a bit of data over 3 years. We actually did this last field year as well, but I'm not going to show that. But with all this data, I then said, all right, can we use any of this, any of these measurements that we took and correlate it with the nematode data that Dr. Smiley provided us? Can I do a multiple regression and using these traits describe the nematode populations? So doing the mathematical models there, we discovered that yes, we can. Nothing by itself, but if I look at the Phi PS2 at the second growth phase, the grain volume weight, and some of the grain characteristics, I can take all of them together and use that to describe the nematode population for that particular line or variety that we're looking at. And if you just look at the R-square value, it was about 50%. But then I did robust regression analysis to give less weight to any potential outliers, and we went up a bit. So then in the second year, the model changed a little bit. We were expecting this. We did a best fit model for each year, and then we also went ahead and looked at the previous best fit model for 2011 and 2012. And we found that we've stayed pretty steady with the robust regression analysis around 70 to 60%. So we were very excited about that, but this is still all just mathematical at this point. We needed to prove if it actually worked. So then in 2012 and 13, along with the field plots that we had, we also planted hedgerows of these same four varieties, in which we just took my measurements, but we did not count nematodes on them. We had that from the plot data. And I took my measurements, I plugged them into the model that I got from the plots, and came back with a predicted nematode count value. And then just ran some simple ANOVAs to see how they ranked, resistant or susceptible relative to each other. And for the most part, we did very well. In this case, we do not want our actual and predicted to be statistically significantly different from each other. So we only had one Persia 20 in 2013. Other than that, we were pretty close. Sao Paulo was spot on in the first year between our predicted and our actual nematode counts. But again, this is the same four lines over and over again. Can we apply this to a broader germplasm set? So that's where that luau population came in, as well as a couple other lines that we use in our greenhouse trials. The lines that are in yellow are expected to be resistant or low nematode populations. The lines in blue are expected to be susceptible based on our greenhouse trials. So again, plugged in the values into my model, came up with some predicted counts, and then did ANOVAs to assess how they would rank with each other. And in 2012, we had 7 out of 3 that were accurately predicted as resistant or susceptible. And in 2013, we had 6 out of 10 that were accurately predicted as resistant or susceptible. And that's about spot on with what we expected from the robust regression analysis that we did. So we're pretty happy with this. And we feel fairly comfortable to conclude that you can use drought physiology models to indirectly measure Pratelenchus resistance in wheat and get good results from that. And some of our future directions that we're taking with this project are focusing on new environments. We've had questions of, well, if usually these measurements measure drought, are we somehow interfering with our nematode ability to predict nematode populations in drier climates? So we're testing that out this year, or this last year. And then we're also expanding the germplasm that we're testing. And then advice on how to use this for breeders to incorporate it into the program, we would say use this particular method in tandem with molecular markers to do large-scale selection in early generations. So you can really whittle down your populations to lines that you like, not only for Pratelenchus resistance, but other traits as well. And then as you get closer to potentially releasing that variety, you want to go ahead and do counting assays, the traditional counting assays, to really confirm that before you release the variety. So with that, I'll go into my acknowledgments. There's a lot of people to thank, and then our funding sources, USDA, the Wheat Commission, the Vogel Grant, and the BioAg Grant, all of Washington State. Okay. Thank you.